Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
Hello, this is David Lee of Prevent Connect, and I am talking today with Meg Stone, who's the director of Impact Boston. Glad to have you with us, Meg.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What we're going to talk about today is a topic that's somewhat controversial, but I think in a really important discussion around primary prevention of violence against women. And it's looking at programs that use self-defense strategies. Meg, can you just briefly describe what Impact Boston is?
Impact Boston is a violence and abuse prevention program that teaches self-defense, communication, and other related skills to help people develop the ability to protect themselves physically and verbally in the moment of an attempted assault, and also the skills to engage in challenging conversations and advocate for healthy relationships and sexual respect in order to change communities and cultures.
The reason that this topic, I think, is important, and we're going to explore about your thoughts around this, is to really think about the contribution of programs like IMPACTS on primary prevention. I've written about feminist self-defense programs and really feel there's a lot of value. Obviously, our history of our prevention work, the foundation of that work really is from feminist self-defense. And I think that there's a lot of those strategies that are used in self-defense that really align well with primary prevention intentions and activities. What do you think some of the work that you do, how it aligns with primary prevention?
There's really two pieces of the way that IMPACT approaches self-defense and safety skills that are aligned with primary prevention. And they're very different ways of changing social and cultural norms. The first is the way that social and cultural norms affect women and girls and others who are at risk to be sexually assaulted, such as LGBT populations. And the second is how it equips those who are community leaders to create change and advocate for healthy relationships and sexual respect in their communities. So I'll start with the internal change that happens for women and girls. In IMPACT and in many other organizations that approach self-defense from a feminist or social justice perspective, a lot of what we're doing is we're looking at all of the messages that we have received from society or perpetrators or family members or others that undermine our safety, that either give us false information about what is dangerous. For example, strangers are dangerous and familiar people are safe is a myth, and we challenge that myth with factual information specifically about sexual violence. But more importantly, it gives those who participate in our classes both a physical and verbal experience of our own power in the face of somebody trying to harm us. Many people who come to our classes are not taught that their bodies are powerful, have some sort of preconceived myth that there's nothing I could do physically to resist an assault. And when we learn that all it takes is a little bit of strategy and a little bit of ability to manage our fear response, and we actually are very powerful, both with our voices and bodies, there's a different way we move through a rape culture. There is really important work being done to change communities, to hold perpetrators accountable, to create response in a way that actually either stops a perpetrator or socializes somebody to make a different choice. But for me, in a rape culture, something is very important about a piece of that strategy living in my body as a woman. I can be part of any community. I can walk wherever I want to walk, go to a party, go out, wherever I might want to go, and I feel less fear and more self-confidence because I know if somebody tries to harm me, I have skills that not only have I tried on a kick pad, but I've tried on an instructor who is verbally harassing me, who's fully padded and playing the role of a perpetrator, so that I have actually physically fought off an assailant enough times that it feels as automatic to me as it would be if I were to get on a bicycle and ride a bicycle.
It's interesting because when we think about this, I want to go a little broader. You've alluded to this, and I think that it's an important point, is that self-assurance and that confidence is not just in the fighting back and defending yourself, but also can be able to have an impact of being able to make those changes. And that I don't want to limit how we see the change of I can fight someone off to only that, but I think really look at how I can make a difference in our community. I can help transform this culture. I can be able to make this become a culture that we want to be safe for women and girls and for all people. That's an important piece of what feminist self-defense programs really do.
Exactly. And that that program is best captured by IMPACT's peer impact program. And that program is for mixed gender student leaders who have some leadership responsibility at their school, whatever that leadership responsibility looks like. At some school, it's a designated group of peer leaders. At other schools, it's other groups. And this is a model that is similar to many of the other bystander mobilization models. But what self-defense training and the way IMPACT does self-defense training contributes to this model is it gives our peer leaders who participate in these programs an opportunity to see themselves as effective and articulate in the face of fear, when they are feeling nervous, when they are feeling fear. Because our situations that we put students in create, not mortal terror, but a simulation of what type of fear a person might feel if they were confronted with something that was, unsafe or outside their comfort zone. And what we do then is we take that experience of effectiveness in the face of fear, and we support students in finding the way to use that skill and that bravery to affect their school culture. So students actually practice with a trained instructor having a conversation with a peer who has not respected the sexual boundaries of someone they were dating, someone who minimized, a woman or girl saying no or she didn't want something or whatever. That same ability to be articulate and effective in the face of fear can also apply to the types of communication we need to do around rape culture. If somebody espouses a victim-blaming attitude, if somebody, says something that we feel might create a culture of disrespect or a culture in which survivors would feel less supported at, coming out as survivors. And what's important about that is many of us have missed bystander opportunities, missed the opportunity to advocate for healthy relationships and sexual respect out of fear. And sometimes the fear is really justified. Sometimes we are concerned about our physical safety. We're concerned about, what harm could come to us if we walk into the middle of a volatile situation. Of course, that's not the goal of primary prevention, but that's often what we're faced with in daily life. Other times we just feel fear not because we're in any danger, but just because speaking up is hard. Challenging a culture that is popular is hard. And when we have a consistent practice of experiencing in our bodies everything we experience when we're nervous, our heart beating, whatever else happens for us, and knowing that we can say, I really don't like what you said to her, or I really wish you wouldn't talk to people like that, or what, a lot of our peer leaders have really said they want to say positive things too. They don't just want to tell people what not to do. They want to encourage some positive ways of having relationships, which I think is incredibly powerful.
Yeah,
so what
I
we're
think this is yeah, you're raising really good points about how we want to be able to be able to find ways to use some of the strategies that you use to be able to support people to be really active pro-social bystanders, which is clearly part of many of our primary prevention strategies. Can you just talk about some of the issues around gender socialization and the work that you're also doing to challenge and redefine gender roles?
Regardless of what gender identity people were either assigned at birth or claimed later in life, there are ways in which our gender socialization undermines our safety. For a lot of masculine socialization, that can often take the form of unnecessary violence, unnecessary fights, things that could be stopped if people can really take a look at their male socialization, their masculinity training, what they've learned, and how it might create situations in which they are acting out of some training rather than acting out of what would be safest for everyone involved. For women and girls, there's an issue of feeling like physically fighting is either not feminine or just not possible. And we spend a lot of time practicing saying no and practicing using firm, calm, assertive, neutral communication to say anything from stop, I don't want to talk to you, leave me alone, to a stranger, to I'm not comfortable with your arm around me, to a familiar person. And being able to find those words and model finding those words for people is a really powerful way of challenging gender socialization. For LGBTQ and trans communities, a lot of gender socialization sort of assigns people to genders that are not what they themselves experience, that people feel like they are put in a masculine or feminine or male and female box, and their life experience is something other than that. And what we can really do is say, okay, let's take off all of these layers of socialization that undermine our safety and focus on what can be proactive in advocating for our safety. And that is clear communication, staying calm in the face of fear, advocating for the kind of communities that we want to see, what the safety that we want to see in our communities looks like, and as an absolute last resort, using physical skills. And though physical skills are a last resort, the process of learning how to do that becomes a process of becoming more self-confident and developing more self-control. So I have experienced a simulated attack enough times that I feel confident that my fear response will not make me freeze. And as a result of that, I have more confidence or more ability to do other things that are scary. We also know from the self-defense research that the self-efficacy or self-confidence that people gain is not just about can I protect myself from a worst-case scenario, but it's can I be safe when I'm traveling alone? Can I get myself out of an uncomfortable first date? Whatever it is that we might otherwise use to limit our lives because of fear, we can begin a process of overcoming as a result of the constant experience of being effective in the face of fear in a supportive environment.
I think that from the primary prevention perspective, how it also can lend towards how I can be able to make a difference in
yes,
my community.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Meg. This is a topic that I know is controversial among people who are doing prevention work, and there's many questions about what the role is, and there's many issues we did not discuss, but what I wanted to do is just explore thinking about the contributions towards primary prevention, and I think leads to the questions for those of us in the Prevent Connect community to think about how we will be able to align our efforts and build comprehensive prevention efforts and be able to incorporate from a wide variety of approaches. And so I appreciate you for sharing your views, and I look forward to continuing this conversation with all of us. So thank you, Meg.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CalCASA.org.